I have time for us to get started, so we're going to jump in here. Thank you all for being here. I'm Dana Robinson. I'm the Director of Marketing and Communications at Sequoia Aging and In-Home Solutions. We are an area agency on aging that serves seniors and people with disabilities. There are area agencies on aging all across the country. They're mandated by the Older Americans Act, but they've left it up to states to determine how they're going to do it. So in Indiana, we're all private not-for-profits. In some places, they're affiliated with universities, some places with government institutions. But if you are looking for services or information about resources in your area, you can Google Area Agency on Aging and put in your zip code and find your agency that serves seniors and people with disabilities in your community. So it's going to have a different name than Sequoia, but we're everywhere. That's my day job. I've also been married 37 years to my husband, Dale Robinson, at the back. He is an executive minister in Indianapolis for the North Central Church of Christ. He's also preached in Chicago and in St. Louis, and we were in St. Louis for 19 years and worked with the St. Louis Spiritual Internship while we were there as well. And so I say all that hopefully to give me some street cred when I talk about the fact that I think ministry and caregiving have a lot in common. How many of you are or have been family caregivers? Yeah, okay, so you get a certain age, and all of us deal with parents as well, right? But I don't know if any of you have also had a person with disabilities that you were caring for of any age. I think a lot of times family caregivers do not recognize that they're caregivers. They say, I'm a son, I'm just a daughter, I'm just a wife, I'm just doing what I need to do for my loved one. And they don't accept the label of caregiver. They think caregiver is the professional person that you hire to come in and provide some hands-on assistance for an individual. But so one of the things we struggle with as an area agency on aging when we're trying to talk to caregivers is that they don't recognize that they're a caregiver and that applies to them. So just so you know, everybody raise your hand, you're caregivers, you know that, you've been through the drill. When early in my marriage, I read an article that said, it's possible to pass out bread to others and be starving yourself. And it was about ministry. And the author's point was that to be in ministry for the long haul, you have to attend to your needs first. You have to take care of your relationship with God. You have to take care of your relationship with your spouse, your family, your children, your health, in order to be able to continue serving and serving and serving and serving, right? You can't do that unless you're taking care of your needs first. And the same thing is true for family caregivers. And so often family caregivers will put everybody's needs above themselves first, and they'll say, you know, no, I don't need to go to the doctor, I don't need to take care of myself, I don't need to get respite because I'm taking care of my loved one. And the message that I try to give in this video series is it's not only okay for you to take care of yourself, it's essential for you to take care of yourself. So that's what the primary message of this caregiving video series is, but I'm going to jump in here so that you can see a little bit more. As the director of marketing, I'm the agency storyteller. So I interview a lot of our clients and their families to tell stories about how our services are helping the family. But in the middle of that, you hear all the family stories, right? And you hear their burden, you hear their pain, you hear how our agency helped them out, but you also just get to know a lot of different situations. And so professionally, I was being informed about the needs of caregivers as I was interviewing these families. Personally, my caregiving journey began in 2010 when my mother died of cancer. And suddenly my father, who was perfectly healthy, but didn't see well and couldn't drive, and was needing more assistance. And so, you know, I have three brothers, and we had to have conversations about how can we help Dad. None of us lived in the same state with him. And and some just the conversations that families have to have about now that you're aging and you're alone, what can we do to help support you and work through this situation to continue to take care of you? And so he ended up moving next door to my brother, and my brother's the hands-on care now for him, but I still have that support role where I call every day, and I'm playing tag team with my brothers and trying to give them some respite so they can go away and not worry about what's going on with Dad. At the same time, I was going through that with my own family. Dale's mom was suffering from Pick's disease and wound up in a nursing home, and the trials related to that. His brother was actually the in-home caregiver, but his brother has some disabilities, and now that Mom is gone again, Dale's in a long-distance caregiving role for his brother. And so professionally, personally, all of this is on my heart. After Mom died, I attended the Grief Share support group. Have any of you been through Grief Share? So you're familiar with that. As I was attending Grief Share and finding it personally helpful, then as I recovered some in my grief, then I started hosting Grief Share groups. And as I was doing that, I kept thinking, why don't we have something like this for caregivers? Why is there no curriculum in churches for caregivers to help support? Because it's a huge burden, and everybody goes through it. And especially as, you know, the boomers age, we've got this huge cohort of people who are all caring for parents at the same time and asking each other questions, and nobody had answers for each other. So it kind of became a burden on my heart that I talked about a lot at work. So in 2016, the state of Indiana, FSSA is a Family Social Services Administration, gave us an opportunity to apply for a grant, and my boss came in and threw grant papers on my desk and said, put up or shut up, because I've been harping about this for so long. And so I thought, okay, well, here's my opportunity. We have a lot of collaboration in Indiana, in Indianapolis, where I live, with regional health partners are there. We have providers. We have association with elder law attorneys, family caregivers. I kind of had all the pieces and parts together. And so I contacted a lot of the experts that I knew, and I said, would you be willing to let me interview you on camera and then do this for free? And we will distribute this for free to family caregivers. And they said yes. That is kind of the background for how this developed. In addition to that, our agency had an opportunity in 2013 to participate in a survey called the COSOA survey, where we surveyed 3,000 seniors in our community, and we asked them what their needs were. And from that, there was a subset who are caregivers. And in the survey, 42% said that they feel overwhelmed. 44% said they felt lonely. 61% reported changes in their personal health as a result of their being a caregiver. You know, when Bob Goff was talking this morning about caring for the lonely and the isolated and the hurting, all I could hear about were the family caregivers, because that applies to caregivers. One of the community experts, one of the foremost dementia experts in our nation, is Dr. Malaz Bustani, who is located in Indianapolis. And he preaches all the time about the fact that your risk of death is higher just by your role of being a caregiver. And so often the caregiver dies before the care recipient because of the stress of caregiving. And particularly it affects the heart in women. And so those were just more pieces, more challenges to, you know, why I felt like a faith community needed to be involved in helping to support the caregivers in their midst. So that was the background. So what we did is put together this series of six videos The topics we chose, the first one is on the journey of caregiving, insights for the road ahead. And the idea there is just caregiving generally starts in one of two ways, right? It either sneaks up on you or you enter it in crisis mode. Somebody's in the hospital, somebody's fallen, somebody's had a medical incident, and suddenly, you know, you're in crisis and you're not prepared for it. And so in either case, you go through a period of grief because there's a loss of normal. And suddenly your world's turned upside down. You got to make some major changes to your own family situation, living situation. You have to learn to speak a new language with doctors and lawyers. And that can be very difficult. As well, there's different types of caregiving, right? We all know about the sandwich generation, where you're caring for an aging parent and a child at the same time. Or you're a long-distance caregiver and you're hampered somewhat because you don't have eyes on the situation every day. You can't be there to daily monitor things, and so you're checking in from a distance. Grandparents raising grandchildren. There is a whole cohort of parents who are not in the home taking care of their children, either because of they might be in jail, they might have drug issues, they might be have mental illness issues, whatever, but suddenly there's this huge need for grandparents to be raising grandchildren, and frankly, in the time difference between when they raise their own children and when they now have grandchildren, things have changed in the world. It's a different world, and they may not have the tools they need to navigate that. The second one, ducks in a row, is free advice from elder law attorneys. I just turned the camera on the attorney and I said, I walked into your office, I don't know anything, talk to me, what do I need to know, what do I need to do? So it's all free advice from elder law attorneys. The third one, feelings of caregiving, dealing with negative emotions. We often enter caregiving out of love, out of duty or devotion, and suddenly we're smacked upside the head with anger, with bitterness, with feeling trapped, with feeling jealous, with feeling like martyr syndrome, you know, how come there's four children and I'm the only one doing anything, you know, and so that can be very disconcerting for caregivers because what they thought was going to be a good situation now has surfaced all kinds of negative emotions in themselves, and they don't know how to deal with or process that. So that's what the third video is about. The fourth one, oxygen mask. If you only watch one video, watch this one, and I'm going to show you 10 minutes of it. But essentially, it's put the mask on yourself so you can take care of your loved one for the long haul. The fifth one is on abuse, preventing the unthinkable. The abuse, obviously there's physical abuse, there's verbal abuse, there's emotional abuse, there's neglect, there's sexual abuse. I don't talk about sexual abuse in this video, but I talk about all the others. And the abuse can be either way, right? So sometimes it's the caregiver that's being slapped around by a senior with dementia. Sometimes it is a frustrated, tired caregiver who slaps their aging parent because the parent has asked the same thing for the 20th time and they can't take it anymore. And so anyway, it's just about how to deal with those issues when they arise in the home to prevent abuse from happening. And then, you know, it touches on the fact, I see this all the time in my work, families where the senior is the only one who's receiving income. And so the family is taking advantage of the senior and yet neglecting the senior's care. So everybody's just in the home for the paycheck and grandmom is not getting fed or bathed or taken care of. Or we all know all the scams that can go on with financial abuse. And then the last one is on know your resources. And we are based in Indianapolis, but I tried to, in this video, talk about resources that are nationwide, right? So organizations that you can find in any community that can be some assistance there, you know, the Alzheimer's Association, et cetera. NAMI, there was a presentation earlier today is a mental health agency. There's About Special Kids, if you're raising a child with special needs, that they're nationwide. And so I tried to highlight those just to help people look for, learn how to build that network of community resources. So I'm going to stop here for a minute and show you 10 minutes of oxygen masks, and then we'll continue.
Evidence-based medicine has clearly said that if someone has chronic stress to their body over an extended period of time, you are at risk for developing a life-threatening illness yourself.
Your risk of death is higher just by your role of being a caregiver, after taking into account all your other conditions.
I find that often times people are afraid to seek help because of what it says about them. That it says, I'm not good enough, I'm a failure. Which is detrimental. It's detrimental to really everybody involved.
The journey is probably longer than you thought, and we've got to take care of ourselves for the long run. And the whole oxygen mask metaphor is great. My sister Lauren tells me that from time to time. Put on the mask for yourself so you can keep taking care of Dad.
If you've ever flown, you know that before the plane leaves the gate, the flight attendants give a safety demonstration. In it, they show the proper use of seatbelts, point out the emergency exits, and discuss what to do if an oxygen mask drops down in front of you. Typically, they say something like this: if you're traveling with a small child or someone who requires assistance, secure your own mask first, then assist the other person. The reason is simple. If you're unconscious, you can't very well help the other person. So today we're talking about oxygen masks as a metaphor for taking care of yourself first. Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Ostrom, the Wesley P. Martin Professor of Alzheimer's Disease Education here at the Indiana University School of Medicine.
And I'm Orion Bell, President and CEO of Sequoia Aging and In-Home Solutions. We're your hosts for this video series, and we're glad you've joined us. In the previous video, we discussed how the emotions of caregiving can produce chronic, long-term stress with life-altering and even fatal health consequences. Today, we'll be looking at the importance of respite and preventative self-care to help reduce that stress. Welcome to CareAware.
Time is a luxury. All of us have only 24 hours a day to live, eat, sleep, have fun, and work. When you are a caregiver, especially if you are a caregiver who lives with their loved one with a disability at home, who technically are working 24/7. So the first step is you have to look at your caregiving as a work. And it's almost like you're working 2 to 3 full-time jobs. So if you're working 40 hours a week already, and you're working another 80 hours, sometimes 120 hours a week as a caregiver, you got a total of 160 hours a week. So if you are working 120 to 160 hours a week, to the best of my knowledge, you're still a human, you're not a saint. It's going to be a matter of time where you're going to crash, and then your loved one will suffer.
The best thing to do is realize we can't do it all. I can't do it all. You can't do it all. You have to take care of yourself. Because if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be around to be able to take care of anyone, or you're going to require a caregiver for yourself. It is so important to have that good mental and physical well-being.
It's important to be realistic as a caregiver about what you can and can't do. So start by taking a look at everything your loved one needs. Then consider what you can reasonably do. And what do you need help with? Then start building your team.
When you're stressed out as a caregiver, your loved one will feel that, and both of you tend to suffer. Conversely, when you feel at ease, your loved one will also experience a greater sense of comfort, and the caregiving experience itself can take on new meaning and purpose for both of you.
If you are thrust into the role of the caregiver, either because you are a power of attorney or healthcare representative or guardian, you need to build your response team. You need to lead that response team. But that means getting some allies lined up. That means perhaps a good elder law attorney who can help with questions along the way. It might mean a nurse practitioner. It might mean a private geriatric nurse to help bounce ideas off of. It may be your siblings. You need to help watch out for these things. Take notes. Report back to them. Let's confer about this. You can't do it alone. You got to get your team in place.
Delegate. you find what you're good at, and then you learn what the people around you are good at.
Your caregiving team, or who needs to be in your caregiving team, should be a team that's both, you know, wide and deep. So you start obviously with family. You start with building around siblings, being around children, older children, your siblings, your relatives, and you find key areas where people can be involved and be engaged. So it may be a situation where you have people tasked with just research, right? Researching community organizations around the area that can support the needs of your family member. Or you have a family member who's an expert in, you know, financial planning, or is a lawyer, or whatever the case may be, you bring them in to that team. Then the second sort of layer is your friends, your faith community, your colleagues, your coworkers, and you use those folks for different resources. It may be for providing a few minutes of respite care with a trusted friend, or it may be an opportunity just to take a break and walk and have a casual conversation with a colleague so that you take your mind off of the daily stresses of caring for somebody. And then I'd say that third ring would consist of subject matter experts, right? So your area agencies on aging, your physicians, your nurses, your geriatric care managers, the hospital social workers. So that team of experts that you can call on when you need to find out kind of what are the next steps, or what is the treatment plan for my loved one? Where can I go to find respite care? Where can I go to find, you know, if it's a situation where we need to sort of transition into a long-term care, where can I find resources around that type of information? So building a team that's both wide and deep will ensure that your caregiving journey is one that's, you know, a successful one, and that you find the best way to care for your loved one as well.
I also find sometimes that people don't seek services because they believe they're protecting their loved ones. You know, I've heard people say, well, they won't have anybody come into the home, or they'll send them home. And I said, have you tried? And that may have been the case 3 or 6 months ago. But the one thing that we know about caregiving is that it is constantly changing. And so what a loved one may or may not have said they wanted, or what a loved one may or may not have been willing to do 3 or 6 months ago, may be completely different, because they may have come to the point when they recognize, you know, my son or my daughter or my spouse just can't do this anymore, and that they don't hold that against them. Oftentimes, caregivers don't want to ask for help because at some level they like the control. They want to make sure that everything is in order, and again, that can only serve oftentimes over an extended period of time to cause caregiver burnout and caregiver stress.
I had a gentleman in Avon who had 14 women who gave him a day a week for 6 years, and they had a schedule done and they rotated in and out. I was totally impressed, and he didn't even have to manage it. One of the women from the church managed it. And it was all because he asked. And people just sometimes are afraid to ask.
You got to know who to ask. You hopefully have somebody, and then you just got to ask. And when you ask for help, you've got to be pretty clear what you need. I think you need to know that you need help. You need to swallow your pride and ask for it. You need to know who you can ask. and you need to just be brave and do it, knowing if they can't do it, that you're going to be okay with that and not waste a lot of negative energy. And then I think it's really important, if you do ask for help and you get it, that you say thank you, that you are grateful and express your gratitude.
Even though caregivers often find great fulfillment in providing care for their loved one,
just so you get a little bit of a taste about what the video is like, each video is roughly 30 minutes, give or take a few. So the next question is, then how do I access it? I did bring copies for everybody if you want to take a copy of the video and the workbook. The bags, I realize people are traveling, you may not want a lot. So if you want to take a copy of the video and the DVD, you're welcome to it here. If the bag has a copy of the video and 10 workbooks. So that's if you want to take it to use in a support group setting, you're welcome to do that. It's all free. Compliments of the state of Indiana. Help yourself afterwards. But I'll show you where things reside, because all of this and some support materials are still on our website. If you go to our website, sequoia.org, and it's on the back of each of these, and it's also, if you just want to take a postcard, or you have the postcard in front of you, you can access it there. If you go to our website, you'll see that it's actually in two places. We have this call to action button on the home page, but sometimes we change that because, like, we're raising money or something, and we'll stick something else there. You can always find it in the primary navigation under CareAware, which is our caregiver support service that we have. And if you click on that page or that link, it'll take you to the CareAware page. And again, it's in two places here always. It's in the sub-navigation bar on the left, and there's also a button underneath it that has the CareAware logo on it, the sunset picture, so you can find it there. If you click on that, it'll take you to this page, and for the video series, if you see on the right hand corner over there where it says preview, that is 60 seconds of the fourth video I just showed you, the oxygen mask video, and we have that on our website in case you're wanting to promote this at church, and you know, sometimes it helps if you show a clip of something for the as an announcement. And so you could, that's the 60 seconds of that video where Dr. Busani says your risk of death is higher just by your role being a caregiver, and it kind of sucks all the oxygen out of the room, and people are like, oh, I need to pay attention to this. So that's here. If you go down to the bottom of the page, it asks you to register before you can log in, and you'll have to give your name and an email address. We do not contact you. We will not harass you. We do not sell it. We're just keeping track so we can report to the state of Indiana how many individuals versus churches versus other institutions are using it. So it's just for reporting purposes. So don't be afraid to give us that information. And once you do that and you log in behind the screen, then there's a whole wealth of additional resources for you. So then on this page, you can see you can access any of the videos there. If you scroll down below it are some of the additional resources that we've prepared for you. So, for example, we have the trailer there again. We also have a customizable poster that you can print out and, you know, put the time and place and location of where your support group is going to meet. I've prepared press releases for you that you can, templates that have information about what each video is about, and you can just add the time and date and send it to the local paper or something if you want to invite the community to come to this caregiver support group. I also have artwork for the postcard that you have. It's just for the front of the postcard, because obviously I don't know where you live and I don't know the information, so you would have to create the back of your postcard, but the rest of it, the template for the front is there. We also have a downloadable PDF of the workbook. So you're welcome to take workbooks, but if you run out of workbooks, you need more workbooks, you are welcome to print it off and copy as many as you have. You have the permission to use it for any kind of educational support program. We ask you not to copy it and sell it, since we're giving it away, but you are welcome to make copies as you need. And that's a copy of the workbook, obviously. We also have a couple of tools here that are in the workbook, but we've put them here because if you're leading a group, you might want additional copies of them. You might want to run off just that page alone. And so I'll show you what those are. Well, this is pointing to a viewer survey. If you do watch the video series with a group, I would love it if you would just go in and take a survey on it. It's a very quick survey, but it gives us some feedback. And so that would be helpful, and you access that there. The next link is actually one that's in the book and that you need perhaps more of. It's called a caregiver well-being tool. And what it actually is, there is a psychological test. It's called the Zaret Burden Scale, and it measures caregiver stress. And so what I like to do is give this test at the very first meeting of a support group, and then give it at the end of the support group, just to see if people are finding that they are able to manage stress better. However, I have highlighted one thing at the bottom of it, which says that if you score 17 or higher on this, it's an indication of high caregiver stress and burnout. And I've had support group leaders report back to me that that stresses the caregivers out even more, because they take the test and they score 21, and then they see that 17 is high, and then they're freaking out that they're going to die, right? So if you use this, you might want to wipe out that line, and you can tell them after they've taken it, you know, if you see that somebody is really stressed and they score really high, you could have a private conversation with them about why this is necessary to kind of get things under control, but that stressed people out even more, so we don't want to do that. The other tool that's on here that I want to pull your attention to is a caregiver weekly checkup. And Dr. Busani, later in the fourth video, talks about four things that he calls it his health prevention bundle for caregivers. He says caregivers need 8 hours of respite every week, and that's in one block. Not 2 hours here, 2 hours here, 2 hours here, because your mind doesn't relax if you've only got 2 hours. You have to have, it's scientifically proven that you need 8 hours away from whatever burden you're carrying in order to be able to relax a little bit about that. And so he recommends 8 hours of respite every week. The second thing is, he said, you need to belong to a monthly support group, and that is preferably actually a group of people who are dealing with the same thing, right? So if your parent has Alzheimer's, it's really best if you're in a support group full of people with Alzheimer's. If you have a child with special needs, it's really good if you're in a group of parents with special needs children. But I think that if in the faith community setting, that doesn't replace that monthly support group. I would say it's in addition to, because what we're really trying to do is see how faith informs our walk and our journey and how we handle our stress and how we carry that burden and how we share each other's burdens in the body of Christ. And so 8 hours of respite, a monthly support group. He talks about having a detailed plan, because most of the time, if your loved one has a disease or a disability, the doctors, I'm pointing to my doctor friend over here, Leah Hopkins, she can tell you what the progression is for for that loved one. What's going to be next? What's coming? Because disease and disability generally follows a progression, right? So nobody should be shocked when they have to have the conversation with mom or dad about taking the keys away, because that's part of a natural progression. So don't approach it blindsided. Know what's coming next. Get advice about what is the best way to address the situation with your loved one, so you have a detailed plan in place for how are we going to handle the next step, the next step, the next step, so you're not in a constant state of crisis. The other thing he talks about is learn to make better decisions, and that's all he says, and doesn't give you any advice on how you do that. So this is a tool, this caregiver weekly checkup is a tool to help you make better decisions. And it's just a way to process your week and say, what happened this week? Did I lose it and start screaming at my child because I was really stressed about mom or dad? Did I have a problem at work? Did I suffer something financially? Did I sit down and eat a gallon of ice cream and binge watch 6 hours of television? Just process your week, what worked well, what didn't work well, and if something didn't work well, don't beat yourself up over it, but make a plan to start again and make a better decision the next time. The next time I'm stressed out, am I going to do this behavior that has negative consequences, or am I going to do this behavior that has more positive consequences? And so that's what this is about. And it might be a good thing to process in the small group setting. Not that every person has to report everything, but you would give people an opportunity to say, hey, did something not work for you this week? What happened? You know, and give them a chance just to talk about what stress they had. Or, hey, have you had a victory this week that you were able to make a better decision and do something different? The video on abuse, one of the individuals in it talks about the fact that every night his father, who had dementia, would fall asleep in a chair. And he would wake up his father to get him ready for bed. And in the process of moving him from the chair to the bedroom and getting him ready for bed, they came to fisticuffs every night. The father would start screaming and yelling and calling his son all kinds of names. And the son would, you know, as he was struggling to get his dad changed and in the bed, his dad saying, you don't love me and you hate me and, you know, all these horrible things. And then the son would get him in bed and tuck him in bed. And then the son, dad would say, I love you, son. And Mark would say, I love you, dad. And he would leave the room. And the next day they would have the whole battle all over again, right? Sometimes we get in these cycles and we think this is how it has to be, and we don't realize that maybe the reason that we're being attacked physically by our loved one is because we are unknowingly instigating it. And maybe instead of letting dad fall asleep in the chair, you put him in bed earlier, or you change him and let him fall asleep in the chair, and then all he has to do is be transported to bed, or you let him sleep in the chair. I mean, there's a lot of different things you can do besides coming to blows with your loved one every night, because you've made a decision that has had a negative consequence for them when they're not in their right mind. So just make better decisions, and this is a tool to help us do that. So I have one employee who works for me. He's 26. And as I was building all this out, he was like, I hate paper. He said, can't we just put all these tools online so people can access them? I was like, of course. So in the back of the workbook is a leader's guide that has icebreaker questions. It has discussion questions. If you want to be one of the cool kids and not carry a workbook, you can access it all from your smartphone and stand there with your smartphone and have all your crib notes right in front of you to lead the discussion, and you don't have to carry paper anywhere. So you can be one of the cool kids, courtesy of my millennial coworker. How is the series being used? So right now, we've distributed it Indiana has 16 area agencies on aging, so we've distributed it to all 16 of the area agencies on aging. We've had 197 people register, individuals register online to use it. We have, in our 8-county area, there are 61 congregations of all different faiths who are using this in a support group setting. Three of our provider organizations, those are home health care agencies, are using it. There are 4 senior living facility organizations that are using it. 5 of the subject matter experts who are in it are using it in support group settings. We have 3 hospital-based caregiver support groups using it. We're having conversations with Anthem for the EAP program, employee assistance program, that they would offer it to individuals as well. And then we're working on trying to get CEU credits for care managers to watch it. But that's kind of where things have gone in the past year with this series. A few testimonials, yada yada, it's wonderful, from some people that have used it and written back to us. So I appreciate that. Using it in a church or a faith group setting, Dale and I led a small group on a Sunday morning at our church. Problem is, classes are only 45 minutes, and this is a 30-minute video. So we did a couple of different things. Some of them we watched the entire video 1 week and we discussed it the next. Sometimes we split them in half and we did half and half. I really intended it to be more like the grief share group where you're planning 90 minutes in a block of time, and so we could do that on a Wednesday night better than a Sunday morning. I know of a church that's doing it on Saturday because caregivers have more time on Saturday to come than on a Sunday or a Wednesday or another time during the week, and so they have this group and they have volunteers that bring them in lunch every Saturday as well. So they get a free lunch and they have their caregiver support group. A lot of different things you can do, but I realize if you're trying to fit it in 45 minutes, it doesn't always work that well. But lots of different opportunities. I'm going to stop there because we're out of time, unless anybody has a question. Okay, well, free is for me. So if you think that you could use it or you know somebody who could, you're welcome to take it. And anything that's left over, I'm just going to put up on the tables upstairs and let anybody in the lectureship have access to it. So thank you.
Thank you.